Mini episode 259 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, everybody. Rick Morris and Jake Digman here today talking some current events with you. This is a little bit of a spillover from our Calm Chaos and Massive Dex discussion. We were talking about Jake's projects that he's got going on out in Hollywood right now. And much like we did the last time Jake and I got together, a little bit of a spillover here. Jake and I being men of many interests. Modern day Renaissance men. Ready to break it all down for you. When I say modern-day Renaissance man, one of the subjects being pro wrestling, so I don't know how often that gets thrown in.
And that just got shot down.
Yeah. That doesn't often get thrown in with the term Renaissance man. But
Damian Sandow would disagree with you.
Damian Sandow is friggin' awesome. And I loved how you put up on Facebook, by the way, when he was doing his road dog thing.
Oh, I saw that. I'm like, that's just great. Oh, you were unaware? Your posterior better try to get in contact with somebody.
At once.
Once, yes.
He is awesome. That whole intellectual savior of the masses gimmick is tremendous. Even if there's no ostensible purpose for putting him with Cody Rhodes other than you get the name Rhodes Scholars, I mean, they've never established, you know, Cody Rhodes is not by any indication playing a snob character himself, but...
And by the way, congratulations to the Rhodes Scholars for having the shortest breakup in tag team history. One show where they decided, wait, no, we have nothing else to do with you guys. You're getting back together again!
Yeah, yeah, well, you know...
Blame the pencil.
Something tells me that the booking committee needs a little, shall we say, little extra little perspective here.
I'm trying to blame the pencil for everything.
Yeah, yeah. I think if the right pencil were... We're doing more stuff there if you're picking up what I'm putting down. But they would be in better shape. But having said that, because
I almost fell asleep. Last night, well, I'll tell you this earlier before we came on the air.
Yeah.
I watched the show last night, and I was like, it was a chore. I felt like I was being tortured. I felt like I was being punished and tortured. Like, it was almost like a marathon that I had to finish it. I've already gone this long, and it took as long as a marathon. Actually, come to think of it, I know people can finish marathons quicker than 3 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and you're not merely speaking of the Pittspukians in the audience, but what you were forced to watch in the ring.
Oh, it just drug on and on and on and on to the point I'm like, sitting there going, I actually stopped partway through and started watching last week's episode, or Sunday night's Walking Dead episode.
Yeah.
And that wasn't that good either. I love that show. We can get into that in a little bit. It's one of my favorite shows. I can't wait till the series or the season finale where the rumor has they killed 27 people. We're trying to figure out today if there's even 27 people on the show.
Really?
Yeah, it's
wow.
According to a Rolling Stone interview, they killed 27 cast members.
That's a show that I got to get into.
The Walking Dead is good. It's slow. It's really it has episodes that are really awesome, and then like it's almost like it's kind of like the build to WrestleMania.
Okay,
it's like you know they're building to the big blow off, so it just drags out for what could have already been established in one episode has been dragging out for three now.
But you can't get into it like halfway through, right? Like if I started now, I'd be lost, right? That's one of them things. I'd have to get the DVDs and start at the outset.
You could watch it now. I mean, you could pick up on it, but I recommend watching it from the very beginning if you want to have an emotional attachment to the characters. If not, you're going to be like, well, who's this guy? And what's like,
right.
I mean, because there are characters that have left the show that come back that have, and the overall storyline arc to it is, yeah, I recommend watching it from the very beginning.
Because I'm pretty good at starting part of the way in and then subsequently catching up on DVD. I did it with Breaking Bad. I did it with Justified. I couldn't do it with Sons of Anarchy. They're like, screw it. They're all dirty-looking bikers. How am I supposed to distinguish them?
Yeah, yeah. With Breaking Bad, I remember I was over at a friend of mine's house one day, and he was having a cookout, and it was the season premiere of Breaking Bad. And I'd never seen Breaking Bad, so I watched the season premiere of Breaking Bad.
Which year was it?
This past season.
Oh, okay.
And I'd never seen Breaking Bad. So then when I before I left and went out to Cali, and actually while I was there, I... caught up on the entire series. And when I got back to that episode again, I was like, hey, I remember this episode. I saw this one already. Now it makes sense. Before, nothing made sense, but I get it now.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I mean, I think that how it is with almost any show that you watch, though, except for Home Improvement. Home Improvement was one of those shows where it was the same thing every single episode. Tim builds something. Tim builds something stupid that breaks. Tim makes Jill mad. Tim has to go over and ask Wilson for advice. Wilson gives Tim advice. Tim does something creative. Jill forgives him every episode.
And I remember, like, I used to get called a snob back in the day for saying this. I could never figure out, because it went head-to-head a lot of the time with Frasier, who would watch that over Frasier?
My
could
dad.
Really?
Yeah, okay. My dad was owned a home improvement
business.
Well,
you know
business, what? So he got the humor of it. It was
and
more him.
The funny thing is, and
I
you
never
and
watched
I,
Frasier.
You and I have more in common than I even realized, because my dad, my dad only dabbled in the home improvement, but he did a little bit of that on the side. And yeah, I think my dad was kind of like more into that too. But like, I loved Frasier, and it was like, and Home Improvement, like you said, it was the same episode every time.
Yeah, really strangely, I loved Cheers. Uh-huh. I loved the Frasier character. Uh-huh. I never watched Frasier.
Okay.
I'm aware of it. I know what it was. I know it existed. I just never watched the show.
You were told that it was a thing at one time.
I'm like, yeah, I'm aware it existed. Yeah. But it's like, I just, one of those things that I never really got into. I don't know why. I probably was just, obviously, apparently I was watching Home Improvement at that time.
Okay.
but yeah, I just never really got, I mean, I've seen episodes of Frasier here and there, but it's just one of those shows that I just never really got into. But at the same time, and I hear people like, oh my gosh, you didn't watch Frasier. And then some people are like, you didn't watch Seinfeld?
It was, yeah.
Like, what? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly. And that, the thing about Frasier that you have to appreciate is that, you know, Frasier was great in his role, you know, and some of the other lead characters, but it also had a well-developed mid-card, which leads us back around to the build to WrestleMania for this year, which certainly does not.
The way
that they
mid-card?
Tore it up. Yeah, well, yeah. I'd say Roz was in the mid-card, his radio producer. To a certain extent, the dog, Eddie, was probably in the mid-card. Some of the other characters at the station were in the mid-card.
What was David Hyde Pierce then? Is he a co-main eventer?
He was upper mid-card.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He was on the verge of the main event. When they did he did have a main event storyline with when he started dating the... God, I can't even think of her name, but the one that was the housekeeper there for the father, the British.
Yeah, I just said earlier I'd never watched the show, so you're on your own on this one.
Clearly. I'm foundering and remembering even the names on there. It hasn't been on the air in many years.
The housekeeper on the show?
Oh, Daphne, yeah.
Daphne. Wasn't she also the virgin on the Seinfeld?
Yes, okay. Yes.
That I remember.
Yes, that was tremendous. And this is like the most random thing ever, but a friend of mine one time was in New York on a business trip, and he ended up getting free tickets for a Broadway matinee that Jane, I can't even think of her name, but the one that played
Fonda.
Phoebe. No, the one who played Phoebe was the lead in it.
From Friends?
Daphne. Daphne. The one we were just talking about now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that she would, Jane Leaves, I think was her name, maybe?
Sure.
Yeah, you'll go with it, right? That's close enough.
IMDb, or you'll find it on
yes,
there.
Yeah, you'll find. I can't even believe. Yeah, Daphne from Frasier. But
My favorite Kelsey Grammer character of all time is still Sideshow Bob.
That's true.
Sideshow Bob was awesome.
That really was.
He needs to come back. How long has it been since he was on The Simpsons? Bring him back.
Oh, it's
again.
Been a long time. Well, let me put it to you this way. You're more likely to see him than you are to see Lionel Hutz. Let's just say that, okay?
Aw, man.
Too soon?
Phil Hartman's been dead a long time. But rest in peace, Phil Hartman.
I love Phil Hartman.
Classic.
That was probably still way too soon.
Nah, not at all. Phil Hartman would have wanted the joke done the next week.
He probably, like Paul Bearer, he would have wanted it that way.
And now we're going full circle again, like our conversation we had earlier. How is Vince McMahon going to die? His heart will explode.
We talked about this off air. Yeah, his heart is going to explode someday. I think there's no question about that. It should have, whether it be from cocaine or steroid use.
Allegedly,
20 years ago. But it will happen at some point. He'll probably call for the storylines to be ripped up and restarted with the inclusion of his death as a centerpiece in there. He did it with his faux death a couple of years ago to the great amusement, as you pointed out, of Paul London.
Yes, that's still one of my favorite things ever. So they just fire me, smile. Yeah. Seriously, I'm sick of driving around. Just fire me. I don't even care anymore.
Well,
I've got a house. I got money in the bank. Fire me. You don't even know, and I've worked here for about a year.
Well, and the funny thing is that That was at a point in time not long after the whole Sunday Night Submission heyday, which was probably the nadir.
Whatever happened to those guys? Hey, Kyle Ross.
One guy's working a pencil somewhere, and the other guy is doing football prognostications on this very show.
Oh, really?
We'll leave it to you to figure out which is which. But, yeah. But
and Flick, by the way, is working in Pittsburgh. He's got a job.
Oh, okay.
As a DJ. Shout out to Mike Flick, yeah. The forgotten member of SNS.
Yes, yes. Well, and then, you know, the longtime producer, Jason Jones, still here working with the FDH Lounge.
And I got to give a shout out to Mrs. Jason Jones, who was the one who introduced me to the word spasmatic frenzy that
yes.
I have since incorporated into my vernacular at various points of my life.
Our FDH Entertainment editor, Samantha Jones, the winner of our fantasy band draft back in the day. She actually came out on top on that one. I was pleased and proud to actually finish in second place in that one here, in a field where I probably had the strongest fantasy sports background, but the weakest musical background, and still put together a band that the judges deemed to be second place.
Speaking of fantasy drafts, you will appreciate this.
Yeah.
My friends and I last summer got together, and we did an actual fantasy draft death pool, where
okay.
you got together, you drafted celebrities of who was going to die.
Okay.
In the fifth round, my buddy TJ won the whole thing when he took Art Modell.
Wow.
Yeah, Art Modell dying cost me $10. Jerk.
I don't know if this is a story that I've ever told on the air or not, but how I found out about the death of Anna Nicole Smith back in the day. I was broadcasting, this is back in the old Sports Talk Network days, and this must have been at the tail end of when good people Paul Teeple and I were still doing North Coast Hockey Tonight. As some bonus coverage, we were doing the Barron Cup games in the Greater Cleveland here, broadcasting the high school hockey playoffs. So I show up at the rink one day, and Teeps is there, and he's talking to somebody on his cell phone. And all I hear him say as I'm walking up to him is, well, Anna Nicole was 37 years old, so that would be 63 points to whoever had her. I was like, wait a minute, what? That was literally how I found out.
Oh, that's great.
That cold-blooded ghoul, Paul Teeple, my friend. How you doing, Paulie? Out there in Bismarck, North Dakota these days, broadcasting for the Bismarck Bobcats. Go check them out.
Yeah. That's number one on my vacation plans. Bismarck, North Dakota. Here I come to hang out with Paul Teeple.
Back when Sports Talk Network was talking about franchising local areas, I would always inquire as to, when is Teeple starting up the Sports Talk Bismarck brand? When is he going to be getting that going?
I remember that. I was the one who was in charge of updating the websites for all those different brands. To the point where I'm just kind of like, why am I doing this?
Well,
whatever happened to that, by the way? Are they still around?
In some form or fashion, I'm given to understand. Are we legally allowed
to talk about that?
Well, one of our dignitaries actually still does some programming for there. A shout out to Steve Callis.
Hey, Steve Callis.
You can hear Steve Callis on the network. I'm not directly involved myself these days, but
is the show called A Callis Point of View?
It should be.
Should be like our Callis View.
It, well, he does
Don't
have
be callous.
He does have a
I
blog.
Can do this all night.
Yeah, he does have. Well. You missed one here because it's the name of his blog, Callis Remarks.
There we go, Callis Remarks. Check it out, Callis Remarks. K-A-L-L-A-S?
K-A-L-L-A-S. It's
Callis
actually
Remarks.
stevecallis.com. You can go there, S-T-E-V-E-K-A-L-L-A-S, stevecallis.com, Callis Remarks. And again, my ability to segue anything to wrestling.
You're really obsessed with getting us back to wrestling.
Could there be any more? Yeah. Could there be any more? Callous remarks than what CM Punk did last week on Raw about Paul Bearer or Jake Digman. Could there be any more callous remarks than that?
You know what? Here's my question. I kind of want to know what the story would have been like if Paul Bearer didn't die.
Yeah.
Well, they just said he was dead anyway? Was that the plan? That he was going to be dead? I mean, what was going to be the storyline to this if he wasn't dead?
They just would have gone with some kind of generic respect storyline. But here's the thing, too.
I would have liked that better.
Here's the part nobody talks about, is that you had a thing where, I guess they flew in Paul Bearer's sons that night, you know, so we're doing a tribute to your dad, only to have them see Paul Bearer's storyline son, Kane, out there trying to avenge him. My dad is dead.
You know, I didn't have a problem with that. It actually makes sense that, like, Kane would be mad if they're going with the fact that it was his dad. I mean, if they're not going to break that law of, you know, I mean, it would, for continuity, which is very rare in...
Oh, now they're going to worry about continuity.
But Kane technically was his kid, you know?
Okay.
According to... But the funny thing about this, Kane killed him like three times anyway himself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was watching an 04. What about that thing with the concrete? Are you saying that was kayfabe? Well, where's the continuity in that?
Yeah, the concrete crypt. And the last time we saw Paul Bearer on TV, Kane pushed him up, like locked him in a meat closet or whatever, because I think Randy Orton like threatened to kill him. And he's like, I don't care about him. Go ahead, do it.
Actually, wait a minute.
Bob Orton.
Wasn't Paul Heyman with the Dudleys at the time when they did that angle? They could tie that back in with Paul Heyman and, you know, I tried to kill him with the crypt and the concrete.
Do not give them any more horrible ideas. They already have enough horrible ideas going on there.
Paul Heyman is ass deep in bad storylines anyways right now, a.k.a. the Lesnar Triple H debacle of a storyline last night.
I will say this, though. When I was out in San Diego, I had a chance to go out and hang out with the WWE writing team, which is the little five-year-old mark of me was like a dream come true that I always wanted to do, till about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I understand why now that they have the heavy drinking that they do. Just to deal in that situation, the stories that I was told about stuff, it's like, you know, in any other condition that, I mean, it's in vogue always to, like, rip on the writing team and creative or lack thereof and whatnot. But you can think about this. They are writing over, what, almost 15 hours of original television product every single week.
They are.
And any other business and any other entertainment business, that'd be considered, like, slave torture.
Yep.
But because it's wrestling, it's not considered, you know, it's like the bastard stepchild of TV programming. So it doesn't get the respect that it deserves. And at the same time, we were talking about this earlier, as a result of it, it goes back to, like, what we had last night on a show that, quite frankly, that I said was it was a chore to watch. You asked me when I walked in here, was it worse than 94-95? I'm like, yes, it was 3 hours long. 94-95, at least it was only an hour. And I could turn on Nitro. No, wait, Nitro wasn't on yet.
That's a very good point. You know, you look at it, you compare it to back in the day, Pro, no Damian Demento, Con, 3 hours. Okay, the Con wins out over the Pro.
You got against Damian Demento. What's up? You know he was on the opening to the show for like 5 years?
And wrestled on the first Raw.
I remember Damian Demento's like silhouette being on the opening to Raw till they changed it to like Raw's War or whatever.
Uh-huh.
They changed it up and they had like Steve Austin walking through like fireworks blowing up and Shawn Michaels dancing on the roof of Titan Towers, which was weird.
The height of attitudinal stuff back in the day.
So weird. There's been some weird commentary stuff that was on back in the day, too.
Oh, yeah. Bowling shoe ugly and, you know, as God is my witness.
One of them, it was like something to talk about, like, you know, forget what it was. It was like, I think it might have been a Bastion Booger. And it was something like, you know, this is not going to be, like, visually pleasing. If you want something like that, perhaps you should look at Shawn Michaels. And it was like Vince McMahon saying that. It was like, how did I not pick up on those overtones when I was a kid? What the heck? It's like, you didn't say, like, you know, Sonny or, heck, anybody else.
We understand that those of you in the fan base will be less appreciative of this than you would, say, the bulging package of Shawn Michaels.
Check him out in Playgirl. I did love what they did on the Raw 1000. I was young and stupid. I needed the money. that segment away. Don't Shawn lose a smile to do weird things like post for Playgirl.
Yeah. Outstanding. And we would be remiss, by the way, if we didn't mention the actual best WWE programming these days is not even what is considered overtly under their name. It's the NXT territory out of Orlando that they're running with some great stuff. The Superstars of Tomorrow, they've gone out there and signed all, you know, a lot of the top guys from the independent circuit. And that territory, all I will say, they have a most excellent pencil there. That is a great product.
Wait a minute. So it's like the pro wrestling stars of tomorrow compete here today.
Yes.
Huh. That reminds me of an old slogan for a company back in the day that I may have been associated with.
May or may not have.
That a certain friend of mine may or may not have been a part of the production team for the first TV tapings. Wait a minute. I smell something fishy.
Yeah.
I'm on to you. I'm on to you.
Exactly.
You recognize this. I'm on to you.
Yes. There are parallels there.
I wonder what Cassius Ohno, by the way, that, like, him and Daniel Bryan, the whole beard thing going on. I dig in that.
Yeah, that is. Although the whole thing now, Daniel Bryan with this beard off with Josh Reddick.
Sure, why not? I'm having a beard off right now with myself. It's called I Don't Want to Shave. And I have no reason to shave.
Yeah, but that's would the WWE, would they be in there like trying to rig that poll? Not that they would ever do that, but Daniel Bryan should keep that beard as long as he's in the company. There should not be anything that puts it at risk, even a storyline with Josh Reddick.
Oh no, he shouldn't. If he's gonna lose a beard, he should lose it in a match.
Yes.
Everything should be done for the point of business. If he loses it, he should lose it in a match. But, no, it's kind of identifiable. And I love how I think he's got his hair growing, too. It's like a mop top going on up there.
Right.
It's like, all right, hey, you know what, though? Kudos to Daniel Bryan. He got over.
He did. I've been saying ever since he got there, don't put a ceiling on this guy. This guy can be the biggest main event guy
and
in the company.
Is he a heel or a babyface? I'm confused.
I mean, he's been a tweener for the last, however long the storyline's been going on, 9 months, whatever.
Okay, so, because, like, did he officially turn face when he chanted yes yesterday? Was that him back to being
a
babyface?
No, because he's still going to do a breakup with Kane at some point, but they're going to do the
they're
stupid
such a cute couple.
Thing. Well, they're going to do the stupid thing and make Daniel Bryan the heel.
Why? Do you want to see Kane as a heel again?
Quit fighting the crowd. Kane is not really the point of it. Whatever happens should be a launching pad for Daniel Bryan to face megastardom, which I think he can have.
They should not break up then. They should just stay together and go their own separate ways. Why does every tag team have to break up and fight each other? Why can't they just stay mutual friends and shake hands? Oh, wait, because then they don't actually go out their own separate ways. The Rhodes Scholars tried that, and they were gone for like a week.
Right.
They're like, hey, we're reuniting now. Okay, and we're back.
Right.
I didn't like that, though. We're going our own separate ways, but we're still going to be friends. Let's be friends.
That whole... I've talked about this previously on the show with FDH Lounge Dignitary and our past network co-host, Kyle Ross. The whole thing
Kyle.
Of Shane McMahon and Chris Benoit, summer 2000, that awful homoerotic...
We're just friends.
Friends. Well, they would put that like dot 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 space in there. Like, why are you doing this? Why
the greatest
are you...
faction that never was? Chris Benoit, Edge, Christian, Kurt Angle, and The Big Show.
Yeah,
they don't even think they ever had a name. It's like they're Shane McMahon's friends.
Yeah, you're already in pro wrestling, which I love, but I admit homoerotic overtones are always just around the corner. Why would you want to be walking closer to that corner than you need to? We're just friends. That was stupid.
Yes, apparently it was.
Yeah.
You remembered it 13 years later.
Well, Kyle did as well. We were goofing
I do remember that.
Yeah, during our, I won't say interminable, but our lengthy WrestleMania anthology.
How long was that?
16 hours, 20 minutes.
Straight?
No. Bits and pieces recorded over the course of several weeks. Our follow-up one in the history of SummerSlam was about 7 hours. Well, a shade over 7 hours. So we just kept riffing on those.
You want to have fun with Kyle Ross?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a good one. Hey, Kyle, the Shawn Michaels v. Hulk Hogan match was awesome. 4 stars. For Shawn Michaels selling alone. That's what gives it like 4 stars.
You know what was great? When we were doing the SummerSlam anthology, we were talking about that what a letdown in 93, the Shawn Michaels-Kurt Hennig match was. And that I said, what would have made that match awesome is if both guys would have gone into ridiculous oversell pinball mode on each other.
That would have been great.
That would have been the most awesome thing ever.
I seriously do love the Shawn Michaels v. Hulk Hogan match just for Shawn Michaels selling it and his promo the next night.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this entire thing was just an FU that never happened.
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm here to work, you're not, bye, done.
This never happened.
Like that. Then it's like nothing ever happened. All of a sudden, he's a babyface again, and nothing ever happened. And he oversold like a madman to the point where it was so ridiculous that it was awesome.
Yes. Yes.
One of the greatest on-camera ribs ever.
That really was. And, you know, Shawn Michaels, for once in his life, maybe people would call this cosmic payback for the late 90s, for once in his life because he was going head-to-head with Hulk Hogan, a loser on the end of wrestling politics. And, of course, that is something that can really rear its ugly head and still does to this day in there. Another of my ham-handed segues here to the world of real politics. You being a big Ron Paul guy, even having a show on there, the Diggs Show, on Ron Paul Radio over
good
a period
times.
Of time. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you are the most closely identified person I know out of anybody with the Paul brand here. So I definitely want to get your thoughts on the Rand Paul filibuster, the don't drone me, bro filibuster, because that's the thing that pretty much cemented it. I am in full stand with Rand mode for 2016. I'm down. I actually ordered a T-shirt. I'm getting my Stand with Rand T-shirt, which is actually on its way as we speak. So I'm all in for Rand Paul for next time here. This filibuster, again, it was one of those things, and modern filibusters are a joke. The whole thing where you can just put a hold on somebody and it takes 60 votes, whatever. This was old school, though. This was Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Smith goes to Washington, standing down there in the well of the Senate. You talk till you can't talk no more. You keep going. It was very, very interesting. We talked about this with Calm Chaos. You expect with music and everything like that, these 21st century modern social media accoutrements, this is something that is old school, rooted in the earliest traditions of our republic, and it broke through on social media. Twitter, you had, you know, some of the senators that were coming down there to help him out during the thing there. They're reading tweets of support for Rand Paul. So it was a thing where it really kind of grabbed people and shook them by the lapel. And it's this ancient maneuver, the filibuster, that's been around forever. So what
does
he
sound
did,
like a pro wrestling finishing move.
It kind of
does.
The
filibuster.
It kind of does. It kind of does. So I know, though, but I'm fascinated by this because I know that there's a lot of Ron Paul people that think Rand is a sellout. He's more in the Republican slash conservative mainstream. I don't think to a dangerous degree because I'm somebody that doesn't like the Republican slash conservative mainstream as it is defined today. So I don't find him a sellout at all. I like that he is.
He played
able,
the game.
That's the thing.
He played the game when his endorsement of Mitt Romney was one of those things that like all of the Ron. It's like I actually a couple weeks ago I was on the Angel Clark show. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to be on there on AmericanFreedom.com. Check him out. And I actually was sitting on an argument between two libertarians, which was And I guess if Angel hears this, if she hears me call her a libertarian, she'll get mad at me. So she's actually convinced me. I'm actually, my political affiliation, while we're throwing this out there, I'm now a member of the Bacon Party.
Okay.
I support bacon 100%, free nice. Bacon for all. So I took a step back. I was a part of the Libertarian Party, and I had to resign my position when I moved out to California. And kind of just being involved a little bit in like the politics of politics.
Okay.
It's one of those things that opened my eyes and stuff and realized that, unfortunately, it's never going to change, no matter what happens. And you mentioned, like, you know, with Rand, and, like, I'm glad you support Rand, and I honestly have nothing against. I agree with a lot of things that Rand Paul says, but it's going to be another situation where I don't think that the establishment Republican Party, that is the global elitists, and yes, they are real, they do exist, and anybody who thinks they don't, or you're stop kidding yourself. It is basically two parties under one elite regime that controls the money, that controls the power.
You betcha.
Of what happens. Okay, so let's look at 2016 is our next election. The red team. Do they go with Rand Paul? I don't think they do. They never got behind his father. And I mean, or has it reached the point now that they don't have many options left? Because, I mean, who else are you going to put in there? The Republican Party, in my humble opinion, is a shell joke of itself. Of the GOP, the grand old party, is not what it once was, and it's not going to recover. And now, at the same time, the blue team, the Democratic Party, under the Barack Obama regime, there's been so many people out there like, you know, we voted for Hopi Changey. Like, personally, there's a part of me that I became so disenfranchised by politics, but I really hope that Barack Obama uses his dictatorial powers and declares martial law and says he's staying president forever. Just to stick it to all those people who voted for Hope and Change and didn't look beyond the catchphrase pro-wrestling style message. It's like, okay, you're going up there, you're voting for a guy who has absolutely no experience. None. He had one job as a senator, I do believe. He was a state senator
before that. Four years before he was president, he was a state senator.
And all he was doing at that point in time was just campaigning for his next job.
Yes.
And now he's got this job, and, like, I'm sorry to say this, but our country is not better off than what it was before. And I don't blame – I actually saw a meme the other day blaming Bush still, which made me laugh. It was like, it was blaming George W. Bush for what's going on and everything. So I'm like,
I do
well,
in
I'm
the sense
blame,
that he bequeathed
but you know what? I'm
Obama.
Blaming Reagan for that matter. It's all Reagan's fault.
Well, I blame Bush as far as we wouldn't have Obama had it not been for Bush screwing the pooch. I mean, I think that part of it's absolutely
Speaking
fair.
Speaking of Bush, though, here's another one. And this is the family-friendly
show.
Oh, God,
not Jebby.
Jeb, 2016. I'm telling you right now, if Jeb is on that ballot, I will register to vote, and I will vote him in, and everybody can hate me for it. And I'm not a Republican, but I will vote for Jeb Bush just to get another Bush in the office.
Oh,
why not?
Just what we need.
You do. Everybody, we need more Bush.
See?
We need more Bush in the office.
I made
Rick Morris speechless.
I got nothing.
Excellent.
I got nothing.
I mean, you know, HW, he was there for a while.
Yeah.
And then we had W. How did W win twice? Still baffles me.
Well,
he won twice. And the funny thing is, if you look at the 2012 election compared to the 2004 election, I think there would be a contest between Barack Obama and George W. Bush to see who did the most to get you to not vote for them and still won.
There were a lot of comparisons last year, and I saw them as valid at every step of the way. An unpopular president without, having accomplished anything really good. Bush, at least, you could point to, after 9/11, no more attacks, whatever. But he'd already started the Iraq War, which would be the albatross that swallowed his presidency.
Ugh.
His economics were already going in the crapper. So there are a lot of parallels between Bush 04 and Obama 12. Here's the thing, though, with Rand Paul, and where I – because I agree with you on the playing the game thing. As much as I loathed Mittens, I had no problem
Middles.
With Rand Paul endorsing him. In fact, I was happy that he did, because here's the thing, and this is what I need to tell all the Ron Paul purists out there who hate him and call him a sellout. Rand Paul is co-opting the establishment, not the other way around. He's co-opting them. He's now got Mitch McConnell in his back pocket. Now, I understand, okay, he's endorsed Mitch McConnell for re-election for next year. Okay. Basically, in return, Mitch McConnell's giving him a blank check to do whatever the hell he wants. Okay? The Republican establishment is being co-opted by Rand Paul. And Jack Hunter, who is a great, great columnist, you can read him on the internet under the name The Southern Avenger, Jack Hunter. But he's a blogger who's done a lot of communications work for both Ron Paul and Rand Paul. And he's made the point, Ron Paul, first generation, all about raising the flag, getting awareness, whatever. Rand Paul, second generation, all about getting in there and implementing stuff. You can't ever get anything done purely from the outside, Jake Digman, and that's what a lot of the Ron Paul folks don't understand. Rand Paul's not a sellout. Rand Paul's a guy who understands how to get there so he can change the world.
No, I can't disagree with you. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's the CM Punk DVD that said, I can't change this place from sitting on my couch.
Yeah!
And it's the truth of that. The thing also, it's like, me personally, I am so disenfranchised with the two-party system that unless it's Jeb Bush, I'm not voting for either any Democrat or Republican, and that's just to stick it to everybody else. I'm like, I don't want him in the office. I think it'd be funny. Now, that's my personal view. I just become so – it's just the same old cycle that repeats itself over and over and over again that it's never going to take – I mean, if Rand Paul can come in there and do, like, serious changes, I'm – for it, I just think he's going to go up against the same old party regime, just like pro wrestling. Good old boy network, no matter how much you got the hungry young booker who's got, you know, good things that he wants to do, the good old boy network is still going to make sure their friends in power are the ones that stay in power and what benefits them. It's going to be the same thing over and over again. And it just back to the thing before, we're talking about 2016. Okay, let's go with, you know, that they could go with Rand Paul or Jeb Bush or whoever. Who does the Democrats send in? Who is their representative?
Hillary is the front runner with Biden as basically 1A.
That's horrible.
It is.
Do you realize that we're like one heart attack away from Joe Biden being the president?
I've been saying all along.
It's scary.
Why did Obama pick him in the first place? Assassination insurance.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the only, it had to be it. That's the only thing it could be, because like nobody wants Biden in.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You ever heard some of this guy's interviews? I actually watched a great documentary on Netflix. It was called Media Malpractice, and it was all about – have you ever seen that?
I've heard about it.
It's all about the 2008 elections and how basically the media just had it out for Sarah Palin.
Yep.
And it's an independent documentary. Actually, it's actually done by a libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an independent documentary, and they show like this stuff and how – like the whole thing of like, I can see Canada from my house. She never actually said that.
Right.
It was a spoof on Saturday Night Live, and like the media had it out for her so bad, and they showed like the sound bites of the stupid things that Biden would say that just got swept under the rug.
Right.
But since they had it out for Sarah Palin so bad that they were jumping on this, that they just ganged up on her, and she sits down and does interviews, and I'm like, that's why she flat out said, that's why I wouldn't talk to Katie Couric. Because they would just take little snippets of things that I would say and just put to what they wanted to further their own agenda. To like, no matter what, that entire election with the media behind it was designed for Barack Obama to win.
Yes.
It was absolutely designed that Barack Obama was going to win. They show this and how he was praised as like the savior, and all of a sudden how they would, one of their strategies was they stopped saying his middle name because it was Hussein.
Right.
So you weren't allowed to say his middle name until after the election and after he had won, because it would create a subconscious thought of like terrorism, because his middle name was Hussein. It would connect him to Iraq and Saddam Hussein. So it was the unspoken code amongst the media that they wouldn't do that.
Right.
But then you look at the opposite side of it is Fox News now. Like I don't watch mainstream media. I can't. It's so every once in a while I'll catch something. But
Fox
like
News, which manages to get 90 versions of the word Benghazi in 60 seconds.
Really?
Yes.
Good for them.
Benghazi, man. I can't even do it.
That is impressive. But I saw a meme that was floating around the good old internet the other day that had, like, you know, I'll stop saying what I'm saying about Barack Obama when these networks all start speaking the truth. And I had every network on there but Fox News. And I shared it and I went off. I'm like, there's one that's missing is Fox News.
Right.
Which is clearly just as biased on the opposite side of
things.
Yes. And it's like, it's so sad that our country is, and really our world, is come to the point where we're such a divisive society of people. It's like, everything that is designed out there is designed to make people compete and divide against each other, whether it be politics, you know, red team versus blue team, you're on this side, you're on this side, and don't ever talk about it. If you talk about it, fight with each other. It's like, why can't, whatever happened to, like, you know, peaceful solutions of what's going to be the beneficial of what's good for everybody? And, like, stuff like religion. Religion is one of those topics that, you know, people are like, oh, you can't talk religion. I actually had my views on religion. I was raised Catholic, but I had my views on religion changed by reading a book called Why We Believe What We Believe by Dr. Andrew Newberg. And in it, he talks about, like, the study of neurotheology and where, like, spirituality and having faith and having belief in something for the greater good. Never should you ever kill somebody or be violent towards somebody because their higher power happens to be different than what your higher power is. How about finding the common ground that is in your belief system of something good and uniting that for making us better as a people? But the problem is we're so, through media and through everything, we're so divided on stuff that it's like, well, you know, I mean, even to the point of, like, different sects, like, you have, like, well, you use Christianity as an example in this. You know, you got, like, the Baptists v. Catholics or, like, the Protestants v. Catholics. And it's
right.
Like, you're missing the root core principle of this, of, like, hey, we both believe in a higher power of something that's good. Then you got the atheists who all of a sudden will rip and dog on Christians, and it's like, that's not benefiting your cause whatsoever either.
They don't admit it, but that's a religion. They got their own religion.
Yeah, I think that, don't tell them that, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, true, but that's what I'm not afraid to spend. You know, they spend so much time trying to convince other people. I find the whole concept to be just like a childish kind of want to stick your thumb in the eye of people. I can't even take atheism seriously.
There was times when, like, I can't consider myself an atheist because I'm not. I'm not anything when it comes to that. I'm a spiritual person that there's certain things that I believe, but at the same time, I don't believe that there's a point in time when I was a recovering Catholic that I was very bitter and angry over a lot of stuff that I went through, and I was determined and blah, blah, blah. Then after I read that book, and something that really hit me was like, okay, this is strictly hypothetical out there. I know you will probably 100% disagree with me. Let's just say, on a hypothetical situation, that they found evidence and proof that there was no Jesus Christ. Hypothetical, strictly.
Okay.
What would be the good that could come from that? What would come from that is good? From all the amount of people that did negative things and found Jesus Christ, Shawn Michaels, we're looking at you, we'll use him as an example, that found faith in Jesus Christ, that turned their life around and they did good things. Whether or not you believe in Jesus is irrelevant. The fact that, you know, it was channeled towards something that is good.
Absolutely.
I don't think that you should take that away just for what? So a bunch of atheists would go, ha ha, we're right, and then what? You don't change anything. It would make the world a much less better place. Now, if we could find the same unity amongst, you know, the Muslims and these wars we're fighting that have been going on, and I had actually had a great conversation with my uncle who served in Afghanistan, who flat out told me, it was like, you know, their allies over there, they wouldn't give them a gun. Like, their allies in Afghanistan couldn't have guns because they would shoot them.
Yeah, a lot of, what do they call it, green-on-blue violence,
They would shoot them, and the reason they would shoot them is if I showed up at your house and took over your yard and your neighborhood, you'd probably shoot me, too.
Well,
let's be real about it.
Theoretically, anyways, where they're beefing up their government, but I understand what you're saying. I mean, and again, the loyalties of the people there are not with us, you know, unfortunately, which is, I think, a big part of the reason we're getting out. But what you're saying about sectarianism really rings true, because I remember as far back as, you know, my days interning for a right-wing organization, and coming across me being a lifelong practicing Roman Catholic and, you know, pretty much down the line social conservative, which is very unfashionable in this day and age. But, again, and, like,
get
Baptists.
Out of my house. No, I'm kidding.
Baptists ragging on Catholics. I was like, what is this, the 1920s? There's still anti-Catholic sentiment? Like, I never experienced it.
Now there is.
Well, now it is.
The media. Ooh.
Well, exactly. But, I mean, like, but what I meant was, like, my whole life, okay, there's been anti-Catholic sentiment from the left. But, like, there's anti-Catholic sentiment from the right? It's like, we're allies of you effing fundamentalists on definition of marriage, pro-life, etc. You want to go after us on sectarian things? And oh, by the way, you know, my best friend's a fundamentalist, so this will piss him off. By the way, we were the original church. You
this
broke
is true.
Off of us. Yes.
This is true. I've had this conversation with people before that friends of mine that are, you know, Christian or whatever, and like, yo, I'm not Catholic, I'm Christian. That's like, you do realize that it all stemmed from Catholicism. Yeah. You just changed the rules to fit
what you
wanted.
Thank you, Jake.
And they're just like, no. You did. You just changed the rules as you went along. I mean, how serious can it be if you just change the rules, whatever you want? Like, okay, I mean, but one of the things with that, too, especially in light of, like, all the controversy that's going on with Catholicism, and I was raised Catholic for 12 years, and I have friends like yourself that are still practicing Roman Catholics. I firmly believe that the Catholic Church needs to get with the times. And with a lot of the stuff that's been happening with, like, different scandals and stuff that have been taking place, popes resigning, stuff like that, it's really time that, like, okay, for example, one thing that I had, I remember when I got married eons ago, and I had a conversation with Father Schindler, and he was talking about, he said something to the effect of, like, you know, if you would go to church more often, you'd know what you were supposed to do next. And my retort back was like, it's kind of like getting marriage advice from a priest is like getting car advice from the Amish. You're not married. That was one of those things I never could comprehend when I went there. I understand it's tradition and all that stuff, but, like, sitting there, like, why would I go to a priest to get, like, the sentiment of the stamp of approval on a marriage? That doesn't make any sense to me. It's like I said, it's like going to the Amish for car advice. And I think that it's just me, radical, that especially with, like, how many fewer priests there are, like, nuns that are entering into the seminary, that they should be allowed to marry. It's natural. It's what human beings are put on this earth to procreate. It is a natural thing.
Here's how I look at that. And again, I don't have real firm stands on any of these things. Other than, I mean, I guess I'm generally in favor of the status quo on stuff, but I'm willing to listen to their side. Here's how I look at it, though. But for people who are wanting to go much further than what you just said about, oh, the Roman Catholic Church should be fine with gay people marrying, whatever. Here's how I look at it. It goes down to what is core doctrine and what is not. Because what is the point of having a church if it's all up for grabs? You know, it's 2013 now, and gay marriage is fairly popular, and we don't want to look like we're out. You know what? I know we've been saying all along God doesn't like it, but, hey, once it hit the 60% approval threshold, God likes it. What's the point of having a church if it's all up for grabs? You know what I mean? You have to have core things. Now, what you said about priests and nuns burying, I don't know where that falls in the spectrum of that. I suspect it's probably more towards poor doctrine that they're not going to. But you know what I mean about how some things have to stand and some things have to be irreversible no matter how unpopular they may be?
Yeah, no, I understand that, and I can see your point. I see your argument on that. It's fair. It just, I'm also thinking about, of, like, pretty much saving the church itself.
Sure.
Because, I mean, eventually, I mean, how many faith... And people might get upset for me for saying this, but I'm just shooting from the hip on this one. Religion and faith does not have the same level of precedence that it had 200 years ago.
Of course not.
I mean, it is because the fastest growing religion in the world is no religion. And it's been that way for a long time. It does not. And it's one of those situations where it's like, I believe Episcopalians, they are essentially like the offshoot redheaded cousin of Catholics,
right,
that our priests are allowed to marry in that.
Right.
I had a friend of mine that I went to grade school with whose father was, I don't know what the official term is for a deacon, minister, I don't know.
Seminary theological school.
Yeah. I don't know, but it was very similar to that in that they were allowed to marry. And that's just one of those things that I always thought would be more helpful, and especially would maybe even draw more people in that want to be involved spiritually and be involved in, you know, the church. I mean, there was a point in time when I was in second grade that I thought about, I wanted to be a priest until I found out I couldn't get married.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm good. I'm out.
Sure. And that's, you know, I understand that.
And
that,
I get
that's
the whole, like, you devote your life to God and stuff. But that's the reason why you're supposed to be married to God and to the church. It's just like, it's, and I hate to say this going back to countering what you just said, but it's 2013.
Right,
it's
right.
Not, it's not 700 AD. You know?
Well, and that's the thing. And that's where, I guess, the balance, I guess I got to look for a unifying strand here as my battery power has devolved to just about nothing. But I guess the unified strand on this would probably be you have to find a balance between what makes you relevant and what basically sells out too much on this stuff. I think that's probably, you got to find that sweet spot.
And you mentioned before, the batter runs out, the whole thing on gay marriage. I am 100% for gay marriage.
Okay.
The reason why is I've already got a TV show that I want to pitch to Bravo called Gay Divorce Court. You can't. That would be the most entertaining thing in the world. Gay Divorce Court would be amazing. Amazing television. I am all for gay marriage. I'm like, you know what the heck? If you want to get married, fine. You know, just so we can get gay divorce. 54% of the people get divorced anyway. I think that's a lot of the fear is that that's what's going to happen.
I'm sure that show would be free of all stereotypes, right, Jennings?
No, what are you talking about? Classic. Awesome.
That would be outstanding.
I get Liberace's ghost to be the judge.
Yeah, or some guy that dresses him, which is the next best thing. So, well, always fun breaking down any and all issues with you, Jennings. Thank you for sitting in today. We'll have to make sure it's not too long before we do this again.
Oh, thank you. I think we hit everything.
I think we did, pal.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IAmBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.